Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing the show. A very hearty welcome to all of you on this Tuesday, February 14th, 2023. It is Valentine's Day, and it's Statehood Day in Arizona. More on that and why we are the Valentine State later in the show, when we talk with our historian contributor, Ken Scoville. But right now, we plow into the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station, 1030 KVOI, Tucson's source for trusted news and talk, our worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. That's also the place for all of our podcasts and our very, very complete 12 years worth of shows at the archive. Our telephone interviews on the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Today we resume our every other month interview series presented by Pima Community College, introducing our listeners to the very dedicated educators and supporters of Pima. Joining us on the live line, Jim Craig. Jim is with us, the Dean of the Business and Information Technology Division. Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. I'm very happy to be here with you. How are you doing?
Doing real well. Thank you for asking. Things really popping over at Pima. You got the IT Center of Excellence. You've got the Culinary and Hospitality Program. Why don't we deal with the latter first? Let's talk about hospitality and culinary skills. My goodness, this is a huge portion of the Tucson economy, isn't it, Jim?
Oh, it's huge. And Bill, you know, all of our centers of excellence share a common thread. We really are fundamentally changing education. We're providing practical, hands-on experience, but at the same time, developing a workforce that can help serve Tucson and all of Pima County. Bill, we really want to provide a nexus of quality learning for the community. These centers, not just mine, but all of them at Pima, are really a focal point for practical and innovative training. It's really the best place, if you think about it, it's the best place to start a career, to maintain, to refresh or upscale a career, and to work with other professionals in those career fields.
And the jobs are there, aren't they, Jim?
Oh, they certainly are. They're there more than ever. I mean, with hospitality leadership, for instance, there's such a huge wealth of jobs there, especially after the pandemic. I mean, Tucson's economy accounts for about 40,000 jobs and about $2.8 billion in revenue just in the hospitality industry alone. And as you know, the pandemic, many of those jobs went away, or people left the industry and never came back. So the demand for those jobs is more than it's ever been.
How about the products that you've got going on over there in this area? You've got a remodeled grill. You've got a student-run restaurant. Give us a little update on that, please, Jim Craig.
Oh, it's fantastic. So our Hospitality Leadership Center of Excellence really is a fusion of talent and knowledge with culinary and hospitality leadership and business management. Our advisory committee, Bill, challenged us, and they told us that what we needed to build was short-term certifications like advanced culinary, but also stackable credentials and full associate degree programs that really, when students graduate from our program, they can go into the hospitality business, not as an entry-level employee, but as an entry-level supervisor. So they need to have that breadth and depth of skills in culinary, in hospitality, in the front of the house, and in the back of the house, all at the same time. And so that's what we've built. We've built some award-winning curriculum in both culinary and hospitality and business management, and that's what our students are getting. But now we've been very busy, Bill. We've been building and under construction like crazy. And so as a result of a grant that we've been using, we're building a brand new bakery and pastry kitchen, and that's nearing completion. That'll be ready to go in this coming fall, and we're very excited about that. The bakery and pastry kitchen is going to be a very high-tech kitchen. We're going to have a lot of technology, cameras, students and faculty can be live streamed. They can be filmed as they're demonstrating culinary skills. Students can live stream it live if they're taking the course virtually or online. We've learned a lot, by the way, through the pandemic, because we were literally forced to teach culinary online, and that's pretty tough to do, right?
Yeah, it is.
But we figured it out. We figured it out so well that during the pandemic, we actually won national awards for some of our online culinary classes.
Wow.
We won the national award in 2021 for our Culinary 130 Savory Cuisine course, being recognized as the most outstanding e-course in the nation. And we did that by, think of a standard syllabus for a course. This syllabus was like a menu in a five-star restaurant. Hmm. And students got to select what they wanted for an appetizer, and the main course looked like this assignment. And it was just very creative and very fun. And students had a great experience taking, if you can believe it, a culinary course online.
Huh. Well, I want to get to your area, the Center of Excellence for IT and Cybersecurity. But before we do that, real quickly, this brand new student-run restaurant, would that be open to the public?
Yes, it's so fantastic. It's going to be open to the public. It's going to seat between 40 and 50 people. And the amazing thing about this, Bill, is that the students are going to run the entire thing. They're going to run the front of the house. They're going to run the back of the house. They're going to do the accounting and the inventory control and order the food and the materials. So they're going to have this incredibly rich experience about what does it take to run a restaurant. The students even helped us design the restaurant. They helped us pick out the furniture and the colors and the textures. So it's truly a student-run restaurant. And yes, it'll be open to the public at our beautiful Desert Vista campus. We can't wait to open it up and to have it open to all of the Desert Vista campus community, but it'll also be open to the public. So it's going to be a great experience for our students, a great experience to our faculty and staff, and a wonderful experience, we're sure, to the entire community.
We're speaking with Jim Craig, Dean of Business and Information Technology Division. Jim, I've only got about 3 minutes, and there's a lot to cover here about the Center for Excellence of IT and Cybersecurity. Why don't you hit on some of the high points for our listeners?
It's a groundbreaking Center of Excellence for IT and Cybersecurity. Our enrollment growth has gone up 138% since 2018. Job demand continues to grow at an even faster pace. We're focusing on new models for new majority learners, and we're breaking through barriers in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Our Hispanic and women headcount is up 34-45% respectively. We're breaking new ground in so many different areas, and so we're so proud of our efforts in our live fire cyber warfare range, our student-run data center, and our fusion center, which is interdisciplinary and brings students and community from all different disciplines together. We're really proud of what we've done, and we're getting national recognition for the quality of the learning, the hands-on discipline, the interaction between our students, faculty, and professionals in the IT and cybersecurity field. Kyla Manger, one of our IT graduates, I think says it really great. She says, the staff and faculty there are so humble, kind, and encouraging. I wouldn't have had the opportunities if not for them. I was not confident in my abilities when I got to Pima. They lifted me up. That's really what we're about at Pima. We're there to lift people up. We're there to take them to the next level in their life goals and their opportunities for what they want to do in the future.
The job demand in IT, as we all know, it's just growing at a huge pace. It's really outpacing even your rapid enrollment growth there.
We can't keep up with it.
Yeah.
We're growing as fast as we can. So,
any other quick point that you would like to make, Jim, before we go?
It's a fantastic place to come again, to reskill or upskill. Our average age is 28 years old at Pima. Over 70% of our learners are attending school part-time. We just invite everybody to come to Pima College. Whatever your goals are, we're there to empower them. So please feel free to visit, stop by, and we're here to serve you.
How about fast-tracking credentials?
Fast Track is a fantastic program we have. It's a micro-credential. They're all less than a year long. They're all stackable into our certificates and degrees, and you can upskill in your existing career path, or you can very rapidly get into a brand new career path like IT and cyber, like some of our automotive and building and construction trades and others, very quickly and very powerfully into a career that you really want.
And there's one more point I wanted to make going back to the Arizona Cyber Warfare Range. This is where students go to learn how to break and protect IT environments. In other words, how to protect the system from bad players, right?
That's right. You know, we don't train policemen how to protect our nation by using squirt guns. Why would we protect our cybersecurity professionals how to protect our systems with simulations and fake things? We teach them with the real problems out there, and so our students are very well trained to protect our nation from the threats that exist out there.
How do people find out more? Go to pima.edu, Jim Craig.
You bet. Go to pima.edu, and you can find our programs. You can go to our program landing sites, and you can find all the great programs we have available there.
Jim, it's great catching up with you. Jim Craig over at Pima Community College. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Bill. Great to be on.
Thanks a lot. All right. Take a break right here. Quick word about Mona's Danish Bakery, our favorite bakery in town. We were talking about culinary and started thinking about Mona's and started thinking about a cinnamon roll after my little dental adventure heals. I will be ready for one of those wonderful cinnamon rolls from Mona's Danish Bakery. They are open right now, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open at 6:30. People are waiting when the doors open. I don't blame them. Tuesday through Saturday, then they open at 7 on Sunday, closed on Monday. Check out their newly revamped website. Looks great with all those beautiful color pictures of everything on the menu. The website, monasdanishbakery.com. Next up, Mr. Shelley Fishman, who is giving me, well, let's just call it a neutral thumb position. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Mr. Shelley Fishman. Shelley, happy Statehood Day.
And to you, Bill.
So we had the inflation report. It was basically what had been predicted, but there was some initial, it's not exactly. It went up a little bit.
The report is very complex. I don't want to get into the, the guts of it, but what happened is that the market, when it opened and the inflation report came out, the market didn't quite know how to react, mm-hmm. and so it kind of crashed in the morning, and quite frankly, we're flat on the S&P 500. We're up a little bit on the NASDAQ. The Dow is down, about 0.3% right now, but heading in the right direction. So I think that the inflation report was not a surprise. I think that what we're seeing from the data, both the employment data and the GDP data, is that there's some suspicion that the data, as we go on and refine it, we'll get more and more accurate. But for instance, the employment figures that came out last week were probably a little bit inflated. That's okay. They had plenty of room to be adjusted down and still be an excellent report. But what economists are kind of noodling over right now is how could the old models be so wrong? How could we have 9% inflation, as we did last year, start raising interest rates and the economy not tank? And it's not tanking. I mean, if anything, it's probably the GDP is crawling up at a slower pace. The numbers we saw last week, the week before, were at about a 2% pace, which isn't bad.
And it used to be, and I'm saying used to be, the thinking was recession is necessary to control inflation.
Right. So,
that's at the heart of this.
The way I describe it is what economists are trying to do is figure out how the economy can defy the physics of macroeconomics, and those physics as they were understood in the second half of the last century. And what's happening is that all these economists who were trained, as you would expect, in the 1960s and 70s, are essentially preaching what they've been taught, except reality over the past 40 years has shown that what they were taught isn't necessarily set in stone.
But it was etched in stone, as we all know, in the last century.
It absolutely was, even though if you really go back and take a look, you find out that things didn't always behave the way we were supposed to, even back then. So what we have right now, and without naming the articles, I've got the desk in front of me just covered with paper from the Washington Post and the New York Times and Yahoo Business, where economists are trying to explain why this economy is doing so well when it shouldn't ought to be doing that.
Yeah.
You know, just go through a couple of points. You know, wage growth is moderating.
Mm-hmm.
And labor markets are very, very strong. We have the lowest unemployment rate, like, in forever.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation
55 years,
yeah,
I think it is.
It's decelerating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Consumer behavior is doing exactly what we would expect it to do in an environment of increasing interest rates.
Which is slowing down.
Yes. So consumers are buying fewer goods and more services. And even as the stimulus money is beginning to run dry, consumers are finding a way to contribute to the growth of areas that need to be contributed to, namely services. And most encouraging is there doesn't seem to be a wage-price spiral. And this was, you know, part of the thinking of the 1970s, 1980s, that if wages are going up, then prices will go up, and then wages will go up to catch up, and that spirals on. And what happened in the late 1960s, early 1970s, is Nixon actually put wage price controls on in order to tamper down that wage price spiral. Instead, it just didn't work. So we don't really know how this combination of very good economic signals, with the exception of inflation, is kind of reacting in a way that we can model. And that's got economists kind of scratching their heads and saying, what's going on? But, oh, by the way, it ain't bad. Markets are up since the 1st of January. The economy is growing, though more slowly. Looks like Powell might actually engineer a soft landing. And just a couple of months ago, you know, people were saying, no, we're going to go into recession. Well, you know, there were people who said, we are in a recession.
Yeah.
We weren't. And, you know, I don't think we're going there.
Hey, do we have time to quickly touch on all this hoopla around Social Security, fixing Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid?
You want me to fix the world in 3 minutes?
I do.
Okay. So, this is a hot political topic.
I know.
And it's a hot political topic because our politicians don't have the courage to get together and discuss this honestly with the American public. And when I say our politicians, I mean both on the left and on the right. Social Security, by law, must happen within its budget. In other words, the money coming into Social Security must pay for the benefits that Social Security is sending out every month. What we know for sure, partly because my generation is soaking up a lot more money now because, you know, the boomer generation, and because right now the American population is kind of flat rather than growing, what we know is that sometime around 2032, that Social Security will not have the money that it needs to pay the benefits that it's paying. And it has no choice in that case but to cut those benefits. Now, the American people need to know that. And we need to know that there are ways of fixing Social Security that all come under the category of either reducing benefits, delaying benefits, or increasing Social Security taxes. Now, I'm not Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm not going to, you know, you lie.
Mm-hmm.
When the president says we're not going to touch Social Security, he is making a grave error. He's pushing the can down the road, and that can is full of dynamite.
Mm.
We got to fix this. We can fix it in some ways. You know, one of the most beneficial things Reagan did in the 1980s was to fix Social Security, because it was about to get into the same trouble then. We raised the retirement age a little bit and you know, did some other tweaks, and you know, it lasted for 40 years. Well, we're there again.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to fix Social Security. Medicare is in the same problem, but Medicare is not by law committed to self-funding. So Medicare can simply be a drain on the U.S. dollar and just soak up money. That's okay, but it doesn't sound to me like it's fiscally the right thing to do. Medicare needs to be brought more in concert with Social Security in terms of when you get on it, age 67 rather than age 65. And we have to find ways to increase the amount of money that's taken out of payroll taxes to begin to pay for Medicare services as we go forward. Those things need to be fixed. And as politically, you know, dangerous
it's
as
that the political third rail.
It's a third rail. For those people who don't know what subways are, the third rail is, you know, where all the power comes from.
Hey, we had a third rail in Chicago, too. It wasn't it wasn't just you and your New Yorkers. We had it in Chicago,
right.
too.
But it's dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
It's politically very risky to do, but we need to do it. And every year we delay doing it makes the crisis harder and harder to fix because you go further and further into the red. So, yeah, you know, the taxes need to be raised to pay for Social Security and Medicare. Yeah, Bill, they do.
It's called kicking the can down the road, and at some point you got to stop. All right, Shelley, have a great rest of the week. Thank you,
too,
sir.
Bill.
All right, we'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you interested in sailing on an all-inclusive luxury cruise, trekking on an expedition adventure, or relaxing on a tropical beach? Then join us on February 26th at the Hilton El Conquistador as Bon Voyage Travel hosts our free travel showcase. Over 35 representatives from the world's best travel brands will be on hand to help you discover all the world has to offer. The Bon Voyage Travel Showcase, February 26th. Be sure to visit bvtravel.com for more information.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Bill Buckmaster with you in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site, also home to Zocalo, all that wonderful merchandise from Mexico. If you're looking for any Talavera pottery from Mexico, they have the largest collection by far of anywhere in the state of Arizona. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com are the websites. Open daily. Green Things in their 53rd year of business. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Happy birthday, State of Arizona. Valentine's Day, February 14th, 1912. Arizona admitted to the Union. That's why we're known as the Valentine State. So that was 111 years ago. Let's bring in on the live line historian Ken Scoville. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine today. And again, happy statehood day. We were also called the baby state because we were the last state in the continental United States.
Yeah, New Mexico beat us by a little bit, didn't they?
Yes, just a tiny bit.
Yeah. All right. When you look at the Arizona Constitution, how did Arizonans want a voice in the new state, Ken Scoville?
Tremendously. And in two areas, and we've talked about this in the past, initiative, referendum, recall, but also water rights. And if you would like, I think this is where, and I always tell people, I'm not an attorney, but I want to quote from the Arizona Constitution fairly quickly and give you a little overview, because this is the basis for all the issues that we're having currently that you read in the paper with all those excellent articles that Tony Davis has been.
Yeah, Tony's been doing a great job. Go ahead. Quote from the Arizona Constitution.
Okay. And just as a clarification first, in Arizona, allocation of surface water is determined by the doctrine of prior appropriation, otherwise known as first in time, first in right. Those who put the water to use first are senior water holders, and those who come later hold junior rights. If a junior user is upstream from a senior user, the junior user must leave enough water in the stream to fulfill the senior user's rights. Hmm. And now to just quote, especially right from the Arizona Constitution, riparian water rights. Section 1, the common law doctrine of riparian water rights shall not obtain or be in any force or effect in Arizona. Riparian water rights traditionally are you own the land, you own the water on it, you could dam it up or whatever. Recognition of existing rights, Section 2, all existing rights to the use of any of the waters in the state for all useful or beneficial purposes are hereby recognized and confirmed.
Oh.
So that's the basis for everything, this idea of prior beneficial appropriation and realizing there's all these states along the Colorado River based on all this flow and everything.
How does California and Nevada differ from what we are trying to achieve in our Constitution with water rights?
Okay. Essentially, Nevada aligns for the most part with us that they have appropriative rights. Like everything else, it seems, in California, they have a mix, and it gets even more in the weeds. But California has four types of water rights, including appropriative rights. And now here's another benchmark issue with this. If you notice the geography of our western boundary, it's the Colorado River. California's boundary is the Colorado River. And Nevada's boundary is the Colorado River. So everybody wanted to have a toe in the water so that they would have some kind of right. But California has senior rights because they were the very first to take the water for the Imperial Valley and all their agriculture there. So that sets this early premise up.
Now, the 1922 Colorado River Compact, it's really, really important. Could you explain that briefly?
Sure, and that's what I'm trying to. It's a compact with the neighboring states that first divided river flows among them. And it's just like, you know, speak now or forever, hold your peace. This was the marriage they agreed on. The authors of the original compact made the fateful decision to divvy up the water for the river's lower basin states of California, Arizona, and Nevada in absolute quantities instead of percentages. The upper basin states, and like Colorado and where the actual snow melt that feeds the Colorado, upper basin states were obligated to deliver 7.5 million acre feet per year to the lower states no matter what, which it ended up being a tragically bad design to states other than California, since they got the largest share of the water and the most senior rights to the Colorado River. So right away, California is in first place, and that's what they're arguing up to this moment.
Wouldn't it have been better to do percentages rather than the finite amount?
Sure, but we weren't in the smoke. I wasn't in the smoke, and I don't think you were in the smoke-filled room where they hashed all this out.
Yeah. Now, the next big thing, really kind of the landmark after 1922 Colorado River Compact, came in 1963. This was a Supreme Court decision. What was that about?
Okay, and realizing if you look it up, there were multiple court cases. You know, we've had the Full Employment Act for attorneys for decades arguing all those rulings. A 1963 Supreme Court case ruled that of the first 7.5 million acre feet of the river's waters, 4.4 million acre feet goes to California, 2.8 million acre feet to Arizona, and 300,000 acre feet to Nevada. I might put a little sidebar in. Nevada and Las Vegas especially, it had its own watering hole and watering source. People don't realize that, but Las Vegas actually means the marshes. That they had, they were a major water stop for all the pioneers and native people.
Well, they didn't have a lot. And, of course, then they had Lake Mead too, right?
Well, yeah, later on. But Las Vegas always had water. People don't realize that. They outgrew their water. But they always had water very early.
All right. Now, what about the CAP, the Central Arizona Project?
Okay. And there's where there's where it really hits the road. And essentially, and don't have time today, but Hoover Dam's involved with this and tons of politics. And it's a nice reference, but people used to, in all the politicals in Arizona, would call the Colorado River the Nile of the desert, the Nile of Arizona, because it was that important. Now, the decision would finally be California would not go along with the CAP unless, even of times of shortage, they would still receive their 4.4 million acre-feet allotment, and Arizona would have to cut back their water along with Nevada. But Arizona would take the brunt of it.
So that was go ahead.
And just to give you a little more nuance in this, then we had, and this gets right up to the present, we had a 2019 drought contingency plan about how these cutbacks would be. And California might take a little bit, but Arizona and Nevada. But no one ever planned to have to cut 2 million acre feet. So that's where we start right now.
Ken, before we let you go, it wasn't just water in the Constitution, obviously. The whole initiative and referendum and recall were such key pieces of the Arizona Constitution, weren't they?
Yes, and what this is, tying in with the water, is the people that actually wanted to call Arizona a home and a place to live and raise your family and all of that. We never felt like we had decent representation, and we always said, if we're going to become a state, we're going to have a say about our water, and especially if our state legislature does something screwy, we're going to be able to have an initiative, initiate our own laws, refer whatever laws they pass to the voting public, and recall people. And you can see this is right in the forefront today in our state legislature, a much, much more conservative body than it was when we were the most progressive of progressive states at statehood, is constantly playing with those laws, which are direct democracy.
I know you've got an engagement at 1 o'clock. Are you giving a talk today?
I'm actually talking about the history of Arizona and how it connects with Fort Lowell. And we're talking about plenty of water issues and all of that. For the readers, if you really like to know more, an excellent early book, and it's older, but it's still a classic, is Cadillac Desert by Bark Reisner. And it just really is a wonderful foundation book to understand the wonderful mess that we've all got ourselves into, especially the politicians and all the other land development people and all those kinds of things. But it all always is going to go back to what's called the Law of the River, the 1922 Colorado River Compact.
All right, Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you. Happy Statehood Day.
Same to you. Talk to you later. All right, we'll take a break right here. We'll be talking with Gail Hartman coming up next from Save the Scenic Santa Rita's.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Only about a three-hour drive to a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. Find out about all the things to do. There are a lot of great outdoor activities. And some great places to stay and dine as well. You can find out all about it by visiting their fine website, which is southwestnewmexico.org. Tony Davis is doing such a great job for the Arizona Daily Star covering the environment. He wrote recently that HUD Bay Minerals Incorporated is contesting a federal agency's order to stop grading and land clearing on a portion of its Copper World project while it's under a law enforcement investigation by a second federal agency over its work at the entire site in the Santa Rita Mountains south of Tucson. Tony writes that Hudbay says it intends to operate in that area for 44 years, creating 500 direct long-term jobs and about 3,000 more indirect jobs, and generate $3.3 billion in local, state, federal tax revenue in that time. The original Rosemont Mine on the east side, east slope of the Santa Ritas, is now on indefinite hold thanks to an unfavorable federal court ruling in 2019 that forbade the Hudbay to bury its mine waste on federal land near the original Rosemont pit site. Let's bring in now on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Gail Hartman, who's on the board of directors of Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. Hey, Gail, how are you?
Hello, Bill. Nice to be here.
We've been talking about we've been talking about this in the Santa Ritas, I think, since about 2007, and the story goes on and on, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, and it just gets worse, in my opinion. You know, it's kind of a choice we have here in Tucson. We have these four iconic mountain ranges around us. Santa Ritas are one of them. And do we want to get let the northern half be destroyed just to give money to a foreign mining company and basically send the copper to China? It would go on the world market. So and there's no shortage of copper, by the way. So there really is absolutely no need to be doing this.
So the original focus, as I mentioned, quoting from Tony Davis's article, the original Rosemont mine on the east slope, that isn't really the issue now, is it, Gail? It's this larger copper world project.
Well, it is the issue, actually. Both
okay.
of them are. Hudbay is being rather kind of sneaky, in my opinion. What they have said in their plans is that if they are able to get started, that by year two, they would be digging the Rosemont pit. That's where the ore is. It's really not in these very small pits on the west side or the ridgeline. And they're still going to have the problem of where they're going to put their tailings and waste. Thus, they've been buying up small private parcels, and they've got some state land. And it's very sad. People who had little retirement properties out there felt the need to sell because they were very worried about what might be next door to them. Also, the reason that the EPA is concerned, of course, it's water. And we all know the situation with water here. Water does flow down the west slope into the Santa Cruz. And even though, for some reason, Hudbay is trying to pretend it doesn't. And they would be using enormous amounts of water, about the equivalent of that every year that 41,000 homes would use, and they would like to do it for 44 years. So many of us think that this is just not a really, really very good proposal for southern Arizona.
Hudbay claims, Gail Hartman, it will replace all the groundwater it pumps with Colorado River water. But does the company have a guaranteed Colorado River supply?
Nope. They certainly don't. And we all know that that's paper water they're talking about, not real water. And in the future, there's not going to be enough water, Colorado River water, for them to replace. That's just pure nonsense. And I find this company to be, they're not very truthful in many ways. You know, they are in international court in Canada for human rights violations in Guatemala. They're not easy folks to deal with, and their southern Arizona is not, you know, in their best interest. They are not trying to do things for folks that live here.
And Hudbay, based in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, as you point out, when you hear the word Copper World Project, it almost sounds like it's kind of a Disneyland-type project. What does that image conjure up for you, Gail Hartman?
Well, I think it was kind of a clever term, and they've tried to replace the Rosemont word with Copper World, and really it is both. The western side, which they're making an awful mess on now, we're going to be taking some field trips out there so people can see. I mean, it's a very easy place to get to. You just go drive down, get on Sahuarita Road, and then drive south, and east on Santa Rita Road, as far as you can go, and you'll see how the little hills and the ridgeline are being torn up. For what? Just for their roads and their drill pads. And it just seems like a terrible waste to me. And as I said, the copper isn't there. That west side is where they would like to dump stuff. And it could be very close to people's homes, to an elementary school, upwind from Sowarita, Coyle Creek. You know, they're proposing a sulfuric acid plant, which gives me lots of reasons for concern. There's just a lot of things about this, their proposal, that are not good for us.
Well, you got to wonder about marketing for some of these home developments that this would be a line of sight thing from these homes. And that would, I would think, put a damper on a lot of people saying, I don't want to see that in my backyard, Gail Hartman.
It's very interesting. Real estate folks, I think, generally do explain about this, that there's a potential mine, but some of them don't. And I fear the people that have moved into Coyle Creek, which is one of the nearby residential areas, they are just learning about them, many of them now. We had a meeting there a couple weeks ago that was standing room only. People were so concerned. I think it's very unfortunate that this has not been made more obvious to people who live nearby. Also, on the northwest corner of the Santa Ritas, Hudbay is trying to buy some state land, and we're hoping that will not happen. It would be very close to an elementary school, to suburban developments. And, you know, do you want 700 or 800 feet of tailings in your backyard? You know, there's all kinds of reasons why that's not a good thing to do.
In your letter to the editor on January 4th of this year, you stated that, and you stated it at the beginning in this interview as well, that copper is not in short supply. How do you figure that, Gail Hartman?
Well, there are several mines in southern Arizona. They've been here for a long time. We all know about them, you know, Morenci being one of them. As far as I know, at least a few years ago when we checked, they were not operating at full capacity. There's plenty of copper. And more importantly, or at least as important, is this copper would go on the world market. It would go to Asia, principally to China. So it is not of any benefit, really, to the United States. It really just puts money in the pockets of the investors and the company itself for no good reason, as far as I can see. We do not benefit from this mine in any serious way.
Do you think Save the Scenic Santa Ritas have been instrumental in delaying some of this that first came on all of our radar screens, as I said, I think it was 2007.
Well, we have been, I think, and we owe a huge debt of gratitude to Pima County, to the city of Tucson, to Congressman Grijalva, Congresswoman Kirkpatrick in the past, the Tohono O'odham. There are a lot of folks in elected positions here that are very opposed to this, also the Pascua-Yaqui, several tribes, and it has been a combination of, you know, efforts on many people's parts, also a number of environmental groups, as you can imagine. But particularly Pima County and some of our state legislators and Congressman Grijalva have been extremely important in supporting this, because they understand that this is not good for southern Arizona.
Gail Hartman, good reconnecting with you, Gail. All the best to you.
Thank you so much.
Gail Hartman on the board of directors for the group Save the Scenic Santa Ritas. Okay, coming up tomorrow, we're going to do Travel Talk with Ryan Hansen, and we will preview that travel show that Bon Voyage Travel will be putting on, and I'll be taking part in it. Actually, Ryan Hansen and myself will be doing kind of the opening segment. I think it's at 11 o'clock a week from Sunday at the El Conquistador. So I'm kind of excited to be actually part of the travel show. We'll talk a little bit about that and more on our Travel Talk segment tomorrow with Ryan Hansen. Also, we've got Dr. Victoria Mazes coming up, and I think she's going to get into this thing about a new report about dark chocolate, which is a little bit troubling, especially maybe I shouldn't have brought that up. Today's Valentine's Day. Anyway, that's going to do it today for the Buckmaster Show. I hope everybody has a day full of love on this St. Valentine's Day. On behalf of John on the other side of the glass, Bill Buckmaster saying, talk to you tomorrow.